I probably had a bit too much caffeine and possibly rosé.
Welcome to NPD Soundbites from ANPD, the Association for Nursing Professional Development.
This is the NPD Forecast. Your hosts, Jen Bodine and Jillian Russell, are nursing professional development specialists with years of dynamic NPD experience. Jen and Jill round out ANPD's Nursing Professional Development Practice Team and are your personal environmental scanning forecasters. This podcast series features topics that are relevant to the forecasting of future trends for NPD practice and discusses implications that you can apply to your daily practice.
Welcome everyone to the NPD Forecast. I'm Jillian Russell.
And I'm Jen Bodine. We know that the majority of NPD practitioners practice in acute care setting. However, we know that there are many NPD practitioners that function in non-traditional settings and fulfill incredibly unique roles. In this spooktacular Halloween edition of the NPD Forecast, we'll explore some of these non-traditional jobs with three very special guests who each have super ghoul NPD jobs. Sheila St. Cyr is the Controlled Substance Diversion Prevention Specialist at OU Health in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. She has served in this capacity for 7 years. Prior to this role, Sheila was the Director of Clinical Education at OU Health. In 2018, she was appointed to the Oklahoma Opioid Overdose Fatality Review Board by the Attorney General of Oklahoma and is a member of the National Association of Drug Diversion Investigators, the International Health Facility Diversion Association, and ANA. Sheila is board certified in NPD and recently transitioned into the president-elect position on the ANPD board after serving as a director for 2 years.
Zoe Yule is head of education at AusMed Education in Melbourne, Australia. In this role, she oversees the integrity, quality, and scope of all education development at AusMed. She is also responsible for maintaining and applying accreditation frameworks across software and education and helped lead the journey to achieve ANCC's Accreditation for Distinction, the only Australian provider of nursing continuing professional development to be awarded this distinction. Zoe is an active member of ANPD and provided an international perspective to the work group charged with revising the current 2016 Nursing Professional Development Scope and Standards of Practice.
Lisa Purdy is the Pharmacy Professional Development Practitioner for Riley Hospital for Children in Indianapolis, Indiana. She has 12 years of hospital pharmacy experience where she established her leadership skills through leading over 30 process improvement initiatives to completion, led department strategic planning initiatives, and chaired various committees. She has designed informal leadership programs for two hospital organizations, implemented pharmacy shared governance for two hospital systems, a mentorship program, worked through two IV room builds, developed succession plans for a variety of positions, and has experience in elevating culture that directly impacts patient experience. Welcome. We are so thrilled to have you all here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, appreciate this opportunity to share information on these unique NPD roles.
Well, and I'd like to point out that Zoe, it's 8:30 in the morning here on the East Coast. What she is joining us from Australia, and we're all in shorts and t-shirts, and she is wrapped up in a parka and goulashes because it's winter there. And what time is it there right now?
It's 10:47 p.m. and I live out in the mountains, about an hour from Melbourne CBD. And of all nights, it is going to be, we use Celsius. So it's -1 degree Celsius, which means it's expecting to snow tonight. So, middle of September and snowing, very, very strange weather. So I'm wrapped up.
Well, thank you for staying up late to join our podcast. We appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
So we obviously got to hear a little sneak peek of what it is that each of you do in your unique or super ghoul role in professional development. But we'd like to ask each of you to tell us more. How did you get your start in nursing professional development?
I will go first. So this is Sheila. So I got started in NPD. I had been working on the adult oncology and bone marrow transplant unit at my facility. I'd been a student, I'd been a staff nurse, and then also an assistant head nurse on the 11 to 7 shift for about 7 years. And at that time, the educator role, we referred to them as a clinical coordinator. The names have changed so many times over the years. And the nurse that fulfilled that role, she was getting ready to retire. And so they were looking for somebody to fill that role. And as the assistant head nurse on the 11 to 7 shift, I worked a lot with new grads coming on to the night shift, because that's usually where all the new grads went. They went to the night shift. So I really enjoyed working with those new grads and helping them, you know, move into their new career as being a nurse. And so they saw that I maybe had some potential there and asked me if that would be something I might be interested in. And so I interviewed for it and got the job, and kind of the rest is history from there. And I've fulfilled, you know, several different roles within the MPD arena. And most of my opportunities have always come from mentors. So all of the, you know, whether it was, you know, being an assistant head nurse or being, you know, the clinical coordinator, transitioning into, you know, educator, or, you know, all the different things that I've done, spoken at conferences, it's always been because of the mentoring aspect of nursing. And so I try to pay that forward as well, fulfilling that role of MPD.
How about you, Lisa? You have a very interesting role in that you are a pharmacist. So could you tell us a little bit how you got into NPD?
So there's two pieces to this. So on one hand, the role had to be created. So Greta Price is actually an ACNO here at Riley for professional development. And she was speaking to the leaders here about her work with the MPDs and kind of what they do on a daily basis and how they impact patient care. And Mike McGregory is my director. He happened to be one of the leaders there. And he was like, I want one. And so the two of them came together and developed a role based on the MPD model, and they were able to then have a position to fill. I like LinkedIn and social media and connecting with people. I love to network. And he had been a manager of mine years ago. So when he posted that he had this role, and he kind of loosely described like what an MPD does, I'm reading it and in my mind going, I already do these things at a staffing level. Like, I was a staff pharmacist in inpatient children's hospital in Florida, but I get my hands in a lot of process improvements and different things. And so I was a chair over a shared governance, and we would get these action request forms. And so I had all these emerging leaders that I was working with that were willing to do all this extra work on top of their normal schedule. And I wanted to honor them. So I was creating programs that I would help build their skill set so that they could be seen in front of managers and executives to get promoted. But I was also a facilitator for the onboarding program that the Children's Hospital did. And I had my hand in research and publication already. So, you know, I'm reading all this and going, you know, this seems to fit what I like to do. And so I reached out to him and said, is this kind of what you're thinking? And he's like, well, why don't we have a phone call? Next thing you know, I had an interview. So it kind of went from there.
That's so great, Lisa. We love to hear about your unique journey and how you have integrated. And we'll hear more later on in this conversation, but you have such a great story to tell and how you have incorporated the cornerstones of nursing professional development into pharmacy. So I can't wait to hear more of your story. Zoe, tell us, when did you get your start in nursing professional development?
Well, similar to Sheila, I have to credit a mentor and wonderful leader that didn't just provide me with an opportunity to enter the wonderful world of MPD, but actually encouraged me to become a nurse in the first place. So I met this wonderful woman when I was about 16 years old, and driving home in the car with her one day, she said, so what are you going to do? You know, I'm figuring out, 16 years old, what subjects I do at university and in high school. And she said, what about nursing? I said, oh, yeah. I went home and I said to Mum that this lady, you know, said I should do nursing. And my mum said, I remember it so clearly. We were hanging out the washing. And she said, I always thought you should do nursing. I thought, oh, well, there you go. That's done. Easy. So this wonderful woman really encouraged me to pursue nursing. And I guess my background in nursing was My love was always oncology, hematology, and palliative care, but I definitely got the critical care bug and landed in intensive care, where I specialized and absolutely loved ICU. But I started thinking about impact and reach, and I'd always loved teaching. You know, I'd present at the drop of a hat and, you know, do little in-services whenever I could. But I actually did the calculation of, okay, I work 3 12-hour shifts a week, thereabouts. That's, you know, maybe 100, you look after typically one patient per day. That's 150 roughly patients per year that I can have a positive impact on, and hopefully their family and the team around me. But in education, wow, isn't that different? And so I, again, through this wonderful mentor of mine, got the opportunity to start working at a private education company. And I was, I guess, behind the scenes, as we say, planning, implementing, evaluating educational programs and thinking, isn't this amazing? I get to ring up people, academics, wonderful educators, and invite them to present at conferences and seminars. And I thought, this is just excellent. And then when you started to think about the impact that you had, even though you weren't at the bedside with a patient, you started to think about, well, this many people went to that conference that I helped put on, and imagine how many patients that they're looking after per year. And I got very excited by it. But I must say, it wasn't until I landed in, I think it was Pittsburgh in maybe 2015 or 16 or so, that I think that was the first AMPD convention that I went to. And when I'd never heard of the role, nursing professional development, you know, I'd never didn't know what it meant. And I honestly felt like I'd found home. I'd found my professional identity, and I haven't looked back since then. I've been really just soaking up as much of the MPD world and forging these wonderful connections between Australia and the States since then.
Zoe, I have to laugh because as you were sharing your story, I actually got goosebumps because that is
Halloween theme.
Yeah, totally not related to the Halloween theme, but how powerful that testimony is for the reach and the impact that you have from a professional development perspective. When you knew working at the bedside, you were making a difference, but how can you have a bigger, broader reach? And I personally, that resonates with me so strongly, and I have not been able to articulate that. And it's, you just did such a fabulous job. So thank you so much for sharing. And I want to kind of dovetail off of this question about how you got, each of you got your start in nursing professional development, but with your current unique role or super ghoul NPD job, Sheila, tell us how did you land this unique role in as a nurse and a pharmacy?
Well, thank you, Jill. With my role, you know, like a lot of things in life, they happen because of other things that are occurring or going on in your life. So my father was actually ill, and he had emphysema and was not doing very well. And I needed to take a step back from my 24/7, you know, director of clinical education role and move into something else that allowed me a little bit more flexibility to spend time with my family and help my mom out to take care of my dad. So as I started looking for, you know, different opportunities within the hospital, because I knew I wanted to stay within my health system, I remembered this particular role about the diversion prevention specialist, because my a previous director of mine had actually done some of those pieces as well, or had helped out to develop that role. So I called the director of pharmacy and said, hey, you know, here's what's going on in my life. I think I might be interested in this role, because they knew that they wanted a nurse to fulfill that role because they saw that that was a really important aspect. So she's like, oh my gosh, you know, she's like, you would be perfect with having an oncology background, obviously pain management and knowledge of pain medicines and everything. You know, I had that knowledge with me. And then I also had the knowledge of how nursing works and with, you know, pain medication administration. So I interviewed for the job and I got the job. And once I got into the job and really started reviewing all the different aspects or even how the role could grow. I think it was when I had to renew through the hospital to get my bonus for my certification. And, you know, we have to provide justification for that. So as I, you know, started looking at, okay, I've got to justify, you know, getting my certification bonus. So I started looking at all the roles of an MPD practitioner. And I was like, oh, I do that, check. Oh, I wear that hat, check. So it really, you know, let me know that even though I was in a completely different role, a unique role, it really was still an MPD role because it really did, I really did wear all of those hats still and wanted to even grow some of those hats to have them be bigger hats, especially like in the education aspect, because we didn't do a lot of education and training for our staff nurses and for our leaders about substance use disorder and diversion and what to look for and why it's important to, you know, to look for those things. So that was an area I knew I really wanted to grow. And I also wanted to mentor managers and directors in their ability to, you know, identify diversion at an earlier stage. And then also to even look for those nurses that might be having signs and symptoms of potential impairment even, because really it's about not only the safety of our patients in identifying these things, but it's also about the safety of that nurse or other healthcare professional that might have a substance use disorder. So we can also save that life as well. So that's kind of how I got into this unique role. And I have learned so much over the last 7 years about substance use disorder. And, you know, like Zoe was talking about, it's like making not only an impact with one patient, it's about making an impact with a lot of patients. And so I hope that I have been able to fulfill that aspect of helping to ensure the safety and the quality care of patients throughout my health system.
Sheila, I'll never forget when I heard you present at one of ANPD's annual conventions on your role and the impact that you have supporting diversion initiatives and prevention. And it connected with me because as an MSN student, one of my practicums was focused on creating a prevention diversion program. And to see you and hear your story and the impact that you were making was so empowering and so encouraging to see this unique role flourishing at your facility. So I so distinctly remember you presenting, and I approached you after, and it's, I didn't quite know the words to say, but it was like, gosh, I hear you. And I just am so touched by the work that you're doing and fulfilling this role of NPD in such a unique way. And gosh, here we are several years later having this conversation. So this is really exciting to hear the rest of your story. Lisa, I know you have already shared with us how you landed, essentially how you landed your unique role, but you mentioned a mentor or the importance of networking. And a couple of you had shed light on the importance of a mentor and how powerful that can be to really shape the direction we take our careers in. Is there anything else you wanted to add about how you specifically landed your unique role as a pharmacist, embracing the role of really the NPD practice model and using that as your guide?
I think for me, it was really, I've always had people in my life who said, keep your doors open because you never know. Like my dad always said, have your CV ready. You just never know what it's going to come about. And you always say yes to projects or if there's an opportunity, help someone else out, if you're able to bring that into your capacity, like you can not only advance them and take off a weight of them, but you can create an open door for yourself. And, you know, so for me, it's always been imperative that I keep connections with people and not just like have them as a contact on a social media, but like actually intentionally seek them out. How are you doing? How are your kids? What's important to you? And then when I hear someone else has a connection, like I try to bridge those together. And I think that can be a unique thing too, because especially now people are so separated off that they don't have those connections. And we really do need people who can step up and do some of that. So for me, I keep being told that I'm a unique pharmacist. Like they tell me I'm a unicorn, And I never understood that what that meant, because they're like, you act more like a nurse than you do a pharmacist. You know, pharmacists seem to be more tunnel vision. They don't speak to everybody. But in my mind, I've never seen that until I got into this position. And I was like, oh, now I'm starting to understand what you mean. Like, they do stay in their worlds. So I think it's also just my personality has helped. And I've been able to find some other people that do share those commonalities, you know, and I've always been active in things like your church and stuff, and trying to serve in those capacities. And I think that helps build some of those things. So I would teach, or I would lead the leader groups, like the small circles and stuff. And I mean, all those opportunities lead to where you get to be now.
Okay, I have to interject here for just a second, because some things Zoe said, it made me laugh. So I'm married to a pharmacist. So, you know, unique, you know, because, you know, there's always been that, you know, nursing pharmacy relationship, you know, that's right. Always, well, you know, oh, pharmacy did that, or oh, that nursing, they did that, you know, so it's really interesting. So I see it as pharmacists are very black and white.
Yes.
And nursing, there's many shades of gray. So it was just so funny when you talked about, you know, that you act more like a nurse than a pharmacist. I'm like, oh my gosh, well, yeah, because we think totally differently.
Yes. So,
very true.
Thanks for that, Lisa. And Zoe, I want to hear a little bit about you, because Zoe and I worked closely several times on scope and standards. And I remember specifically, we had a conversation about the where of the NPD, where that occurs. And the conversation was very acute care heavy. And Zoe had no issues calling us out and saying, now, wait a second, not all NPD practitioners work in an acute setting. We work in a variety of settings, which makes us so incredibly flexible and diverse. And I think that Zoe's story here about the uniqueness of her role is also the uniqueness of the setting. So I would love to hear a little bit more about your role in your setting, Zoe.
Thanks, Jed. I actually remember that. Cool. Well, I reckon it was about 5 a.m. one morning in about April last year. It's, well, I've got to say, the role that I'm in currently was created for me after returning from maternity leave. So they probably just thought, what am I going to do with Zoe? This is a good, let's put her here for a bit. But I think briefly on sort of how I landed in it, like it doesn't happen immediately. You know, for anyone listening out there that's looking to land their dream job, it takes time. It really does take time. And then once you've got the job, just because you've changed your email signature and you've got this new title, it doesn't mean you've adjusted. And I've got to say, you know, despite everything that's happened in the last 18 months in the world and the adjustments that we've all had to make, it took me a good 6 to 9 months to adjust to the role. So I'd say that first. Certainly echo the words of Sheila and Lisa, that it's, of course, things like networking and forming connections, a lot of reflection and, you know, thinking about professional associations and further study and things like that. I think for me, doing a master's thesis on evaluation and the impact of continuing professional development probably helped. It gave a bit of, you know, a solid background, not a base of knowledge to the role that I think I draw on every single day. But in terms of your question, Jen, and you know, the where, I was lucky enough, I got to say, to have a heavyweight on my side, and that was Pam Dickerson, who was another member of the work group. And we both discussed the fact that, you know, I work at a private education company. I'm definitely within, you know, this role of MPD, but I read, you know, I'm reading the 2016 standards thinking, this doesn't talk to me. I'm not in a hospital anymore. And obviously Pam at the time was the lead nurse planner at the Montana Nurses Association. And we're just thinking, it doesn't extend fully to these sort of non-traditional places where you find an MPD practitioner. So I guess that's what brings us all together in the end, that it doesn't matter where you are, you're doing the same thing. You're identifying what the needs are. You're connecting with the learner. trying to empathize with what their needs are, balance that with the needs of the organization and other stakeholders, do your best with the resources you've got to implement the particular program, and then hopefully at the end evaluate and sort of reflect, did it all work? So it's funny that it's the language that I found sort of not confusing in the first place, but it was sort of a funny relationship with the language, that I didn't quite get the language of MPD practice to begin with because it was so foreign. But the more that I've embraced the specialty, the more, as I said, it feels like home. And then you can really draw on the scope and standards to help communicate what your role is, where it occurs, and the model which you operate in. And I honestly refer to that model very, very regular and use that as I try and mentor others in the specialty, because it's what really grounds you, and it's what helps you communicate your value and the work that you do in the role.
It's so funny, Zoe. I wonder how many times I hear Pam Dickerson's name come up when we're talking about mentoring. Like, you want to talk about somebody who just influences so many people and influences them quite quietly, very, very humble lady. But you'll hear as you're having conversations, well, I've talked to Pam Dickerson and she's always leading them in the right direction. So I love that you mentioned her name, because she really is just a wealth of knowledge and experience. So, and I think she has mentored many, many NPD practitioners in the right direction. So
the minute you just say, look, well, Pam said,
right? You're like, okay, that's all I needed to know. I'm jumping off that bridge. Yeah, she's great. So I'm going to go ahead and I want to transition a little bit into kind of the specifics of how each of you use your roles and responsibilities of the NPD practitioner. And I really hate to keep saying NPD practitioner, because we've got Lisa, the pharmacist. So it's really in professional development, how are you using these roles and these responsibilities? Because what we're seeing here is that this actually translates to an interprofessional area there. So let's just, I'm going to say now the roles and responsibilities of professional development, because I want Lisa to feel included, because she is embracing our scope and standards, or the NPD Bible, as I call it, which helps to lend so much consistency across the board in our practice. And that's really my favorite thing, is if you follow the recipe, your outcome's going to be great, right? Those chocolate chip cookies are going to be delicious. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start with you this time, Lisa. If you can talk to me about how you use those roles of change agent, leader, mentor, et cetera, and you intertwine them with those responsibilities within your specific specialty.
Yeah. So I will say I had a large learning curve in a sense, because I had to understand what an MPD does and like what's important. And, you know, obviously my mentor, Jamie, she was like, okay, Lise, you got to look at this gear. I'm like, what the heck is this gear? Like, she's like, those are your throughputs. And I'm like, okay, so what are we talking about? Like, and what does this mean? And she had to break down each section. And then like, of course, then things go off, but like the word is different. And Zoe mentioned that too. Like, you have to learn the wording, and then now you have a seat at the table with other people. You can talk the same language. So that was one piece I had to figure out. But I also had to understand what environmental scanning was. Like, that was a new thing to me too. And how you use SWOT analysis in order to figure out your gaps. Like, those are all different pieces that actually were pertinent for me to do a good job. So, you know, I mentioned I do pharmacy, but I also do dietitian, and then the needs are different. Like, the dietitians are more interested in how they can get published and how to do a research project. So that part of the gear is more of a priority for them. But on the pharmacy standpoint, we have more of a turnover, at least in our technicians. So an onboarding and orientation process needed to be a piece that I really needed to go after. So I found myself, since I love role development, really charging ahead with that first and setting a foundation, you know, finding out who my point trainers should be. So like, who are the emerging leaders within the department everybody goes to? And then they could become my extensions to make the culture actually go in the direction I wanted to go. So they had a say in helping build a robust program that we now use. So that, you know, the checkoff list that we use, the competency, they help we identify those gaps in competency. We do utilize the Donner-Wright method. We have some areas where regulatory dictates certain things, but when it comes to looking at needs and how we're going to bring that expectation up across the department, that's been huge, because now my team members have this ability to say, well, I don't have to do dual work because I know my, you know, this coworker is at this expectation. They passed the competency. I know this, so I can trust them. You know, so that's built some things. But, you know, we were able to give ownership to people, which, you know, that brings a different type of loyalty within the department, because now they feel invested in. You know, we have the role development piece was nice because there was a template here for the MPDs where they had, I forget, that some kind of track that they were using where you could go into a bucket and that would tell you like, well, this is your, how you're going to progress with your professional development. And I took that information and created 6 role development pathways for my team. And that, you know, some people will take 1 or 2 of those, but they really provided a focus for me to provide resources and kind of navigate things. And that's been fun to watch people kind of, you know, brighten up a little bit. Now it's like, you know, they come to their own, right? Someone sees them and is investing in them. So for instance, we have one gal that I just love talking about, because last year she told me, you know, I don't really know what I want to do with my life. And pharmacy technicians kind of have this concept that this is just a stepping stone to whatever other career they want to go to. And I want to challenge that with them, because I actually have an opportunity to build a career for you if you give me a chance. And so she was one of them that was like, you know, I have my bachelor's, I tried nursing, I tried, I think it was radiology. And she's like, I'm just not landing anywhere. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So tell me more about like what your strengths are, what brings you joy? Like maybe there's some things that I could tailor together that would actually be a good pairing here. And after a few meetings, we realized she just loves to teach. She's a great educator. And so she became one of the point trainers anyway, because she was very strong in the IV room. And she worked with a couple of people and she created a tier training effect, which I think is a normal thing in nursing, but it's not normal in pharmacy. We like to just throw you in and figure it out. And so she was like, no, I think this is the process I want to go with it. And so we trialed it and the results were impressive. So not only do my new hires not avoid the IV room like the plague, they actually are very strong in it. We can utilize them very well. And they all love her because she gave them the confidence they need to be able to do well. Well, if you talk to her now, she's in her place. She loves it. She has so much joy in her eyes. Like, this is her calling, you know, but she thought she had to go to another career, right? So like, it's just been, it's a beautiful thing when you see those types of things happen and come together really well.
So there's a couple things there. The first is collaborative partnerships.
Yeah.
They are so integral, which is one of the reasons why it's one of our responsibilities. Right. Because they're so integral, because none of us work in a silo, right? Within each of our organizations, we can, you know, connect with other aspects and other specialties within that. So it sounds like you've got a really good handle on that. Yeah. And also succession planning, because we don't often take the opportunity to sit down with someone and explore what excites them, what ignites them and gets them going in the morning and finding out their motivation for things. And I think that we would probably touch on important things like retention within our organizations if we sat down and started making these plans. And even if you don't love your career, that's okay. Maybe we can find something else for you within our organization, so that, you know, we can keep you here and use you for something that's going to really, really get you up in the morning. So I love all of those points you made, Lisa.
Yeah, the succession planning has really been my favorite, because it's almost like if you've read the book Good to Great, like it's putting the right people in the right seats on the bus and not just throwing them on the bus. And so like we've had movement in management, so, and we've had team leads develop. And so we've been able to actually harness the skill sets that we've been plugging into them all year round. And now they're getting honored by being promoted in. And now we have the opposite problem of most people in the country. Like we have so much good in our people, like, and they're doing so well, we keep promoting them up. So that's where we're getting a hole. It's not because they're leaving to go somewhere else. Like, you know, so like we have a great retention right now. And I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud of the team of how they've been able to navigate some of that stuff. But I mean, I think that's been my biggest joy out of this whole job, is I love to grow people. and find that right connection for them to really shine and have joy coming out of them. And that's ultimately what I feel like my job is.
That's wonderful. Zoe, how about you? Like, what are your favorite within what you're doing with your, the uniqueness of your role? What are your favorite roles and responsibilities within that?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's, I'm going to sound one of those like boring people that said they're all my favorite. They honestly, I'd say like, I'd answer that by saying my favorite thing is the model. And we spent so long on the model, didn't we, Jen, when we were reviewing the scope and standards. I think, look, I'd say the practical, I actually use it every day and I often reflect. That's probably the main thing. You reflect on how much you're doing. Oh, actually really, like that's document, that's a role, that's a responsibility. But I'd say that interesting project I'm working on at the moment, which I really have drawn on the practice model, is implementing a clinical governance framework. And we're not an accredited service, so we're not a healthcare organisation in Australia that has a mandatory national standards, set of national standards that we need to meet. You know, we're this unique private education company developing professional development software and online learning experience for health practitioners. And so what I've been able to do is start to develop a clinical governance model that's based on our national clinical governance framework. But a huge part of developing that framework is conducting a self-assessment. And I've used the Katz and Kahn's open systems theory, which is what our practice model is based on, with a bit of flair or inspiration from the logic model. And I've started to visualize all of the aspects that we as an organization, you know, what matters to us and all of our inputs in terms of developing effective education, the throughputs, all of our systems and processes, the outputs, or, you know, the tangible sort of targets we work to, the evaluate, the, you know, the outcomes, all pulled together through the feedback loop and within our sort of unique environment. So I'd actually say that I'm probably using all of the roles and responsibilities, but I do find the model most helpful, especially I'm a visual learner. So I often got that page of the scope and standards or PDF open, and I find that really, really useful. It's sort of like home base when you sort of need to tie a few things together, tie a project together, bring all the different pieces of the parts of the puzzle together. I find the model most helpful.
Well, make no bones about it. The model is one of the most important things in our scope and standards. Yeah. Yes, I did. But do you have it as a screensaver, Zoe? Like, is it your screensaver? You've got it mounted on the wall? Like,
I don't. And I'll tell you what my screensaver is. It is pretty funny. My screensaver is a picture of my wedding dress and veil from my wedding day because, you know, that's not that abnormal. But I got concussed about 4 days before our wedding. I got dehydrated and heat stroke. I probably had a bit too much caffeine and possibly rosé, and I fainted and I hit my head on really heavy, really hard terracotta tiles. And like, I went to the emergency department. I was in regional France in the middle of nowhere. And anyway, there's large portions of the days leading up to my wedding that I don't remember. And about 6 months after our wedding, my best friend said, "Oh, so I really want to borrow your veil. Like, can I try it on to see if that could be my something old?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, it's at Mum's house. She brought it back from France. I'll message her now. I keep meaning to get it dry cleaned." And I said to Mum, "When I come over on the weekend, I've got to get my wedding dress back from you." And she said, "I don't have it." And I said, "I thought you brought it back from France." She said, "I didn't." And because of the concussion, I have no idea where my wedding dress and veil is. So I put it as my desktop. The model might make it there one day, but for now, it's my wedding dress and veil.
Well, it sounds like you remember the model more than your wedding dress. So the wedding dress needs to stay. It's yours. There's a lot to unpack there, and that may be its own podcast at some point, Zoe. So just FYI.
A slight interjection, but we wouldn't be nurses if we don't go off the topic every now and then, hey?
Oh, true, Zoe. Yeah, go ahead, Lisa.
I was just going to say the one thing the model has helped me do is stay in my lane, which I know everybody likes to talk about lanes, but it was especially kind of coming in as a more of an entrepreneur of sorts and building something and having to be able to speak to what I'm trying to learn to do. Coming back to that and speaking those pieces have been very, it's been nice to say, well, no, I can't say yes to that. I have to stay here. And that doesn't actually follow what this is saying. So it's helped me stay on track because I think I've been a yes girl for most of my life. They're like, oh yeah, I can handle that. Oh yeah, I'll do that too. But if it doesn't fulfill what that is intended to do, it's probably not going to bear the fruit that I need it to do. And so it's really been a good course correction of like, before you say yes, run it through and make sure it makes sense. And if it doesn't, I at least know enough people through networking to be like, well, this could be a good fit for you and they should be able to help you. So I think it's good to always have it posted. I do have it on my desk, not my desktop, but making sure that I refer to it regularly. So I do make sure I do those right.
Okay. So that also relates to we have to be cautious of scope creep. Is that too far of a reach for a Halloween pun to guys? Come on.
I say we keep it. I love it.
Okay. But that resonates with project management too. And the NPD practice model is essentially our project charter, if you will, for everything that we do. And you bring up such a great point, Lisa, as far as how we have to purposefully reflect on the things being asked of us because we are so flexible and adaptable and we do wear so many hats. How and when is the right time to say no or redirect to the appropriate resources? And thank you for calling out, you know, through effective networking, I will have a resource and point you in the right direction. So that's such a great point. Sheila, I want to jump back to you. And I know you mentioned when you were reflecting on your recertification and looking at what it is that you do as a diversion prevention specialist and having those aha moments of, well, gosh, I still wear that hat. I do this. Tell us how are you currently using the NPD roles and responsibilities in your current role?
Well, in my current role, like I said, I wear all those hats, but I'll focus on a couple of the different pieces. And one of them, Zoe and Lisa have talked about, and those are those collaborative relationships. And I do a lot of interprofessional collaboration. So we have a med diversion team that we meet monthly, of course, by Zoom right now, obviously not in person. But with this interdisciplinary team, it has members from all across and all different levels. And it starts at the top with our chief nurse executive, our chief nursing officers, myself, the directors of pharmacy, safety and security. It has regulatory on there, ethics and compliance, so and human resources as well. So I collaborate with all of those different areas to review all of the investigations that are ongoing, to look at any opportunities that we might have out there through environmental scanning from all of those people to see, do we have an area that we need to kind of close the window on for diversion prevention? And so we all work together to identify those things and make a plan to how can we, you know, make a change. So I love working with all of those different people, and really I'm kind of the facilitator of anything diversion related. So I'm the point person. So if somebody has an issue or a concern, they know who they need to call. So being that expert in the area, you know, so other NPD practitioners, their area of expertise might be critical care or nephrology or med-surg. My area of expertise now, I'm the subject matter expert on diversion prevention and also substance use disorder. One of the other pieces I think that I didn't really realize until I started, you know, going through those roles and doing that justification was really being a change agent. With substance use disorder and diversion, that is not a subject that people like to talk about. You know, it's just, I always refer to it as that dirty little secret of healthcare that nobody wants to refer to, but we have to talk about it. We have to have those conversations. So I was really, you know, at conference, you know, listening to that one presentation about substance use disorder and nursing. And, you know, that really, that resonated with me completely. So I like to think I'm helping to be that change agent and encouraging other people to have that conversation, to not brush stuff under the rug, to be upfront and honest. And, you know, the mantra is, if you see something, you need to say something. You know, and one conversation to kind of highlight that, I had a nurse director call me. It was like a Friday late afternoon. And she's like, Sheila, I think I have a nurse that's diverting medications. I'm like, okay, well, tell me a little bit about the situation. Who's the nurse? What's the medication? You know, give me all the specifics. And this nurse's name was familiar to me because I had done some investigation because of analytical software that we use to identify potential diverters. But, you know, I always found everything accounted for. I didn't see anything that was, you know, out of the ordinary, but it was a different drug that the director was talking about, completely not what I had looked at with this nurse. And the things that she was telling me, there were a lot of red flags, very concerning. And I said, well, I said, I really think, you know, you probably need to reach out to your HR business partner because they may want to drug screen this nurse if you're really seeing some of these things. And she said, but what if I'm wrong? And I'm like, but what if you're right? I said, let's err on the side of caution. We have to think about the patients. We have to think about this nurse and, you know, what might be going on with them. And I had actually worked with this director many years ago in oncology. And I will say I unfortunately have had the privilege, I don't know if that would be the word I would want to use, but I've worked with several nurses who diverted medications and who had a substance use disorder. And there was one nurse in particular that she and I both worked with who she was not diverting medications, but she did have a substance use disorder and she overdosed and died. And had I known then what I know now, maybe I could have made a difference. But with this director, I'm like, do you remember so-and-so? And she's like, yeah, I do. I do. And I'm like, so what are you going to do? She's like, I'm going to call HR right now and I'm going to have that conversation. So I like to think that I'm also being that change agent and helping people to have those conversations and not be afraid of it, not be scared of it, but really embrace it and know that that's another piece that they need to be looking at and having the conversation about with their staff so that we can make a difference in a lot of different lives.
Sheila, I think it's so important that you, when you mentioned the, it's been a privilege to work with those nurses, and then you were a little uncomfortable about it. But the honest answer, I like that you said that so that we can talk about that, because we've been talking about substance abuse lately at AMPD. We had, you know, the general session at convention, and it's important to remember these nurses are still good people and they still have good hearts. They have a problem. So I'm so glad that you said that and highlighted the fact that, you know, it was great working with these nurses. They just had a problem that needed to be addressed and focused on, and they needed help. So thank you so much for saying that. It's important.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, and one thing when I have conversations with managers and directors, and I tell them all the things that I have found through the course of an investigation, and there are certain things that I know if I see trends, specifically same med month after month, you know, dispensing more than their peers, whatever it might be. And I have that start to initiate that conversation with the manager or the director. And they're like, oh, well, no, they can't be, there's not a problem. They're a great nurse. And just like what you said, I always say, I'm sure that they are a great nurse. However, I really think that there might be something going on. So I try not to make it personal against that nurse because, you know, also one of the other hats I wear, not only do I look for diverters in my hospital, I'm on the other side of it. I sit on a peer assistance committee through the Oklahoma Board of Nursing. And so I'm on the other side of it, helping to get, you know, helping nurses get their license back in good standing. And it is a privilege to work with those nurses because it is hard work for them. It is not an easy task. to get their license back in good standing. And there's a lot of things that they have to do and hoops that they have to jump through and all the drug screens and all of that. But it's so interesting to see a nurse when they first enter the program and then when they leave the program, because it is such a vast difference in how they talk, what they look like, just the emotions that they exude to you when you when you're talking with them. And many of them say, had it not been for this program, or had it not been for somebody identifying that I was, you know, stealing narcotics, I might not be alive today. And so it really is a privilege to work with those nurses.
Sheila, can I just say, I think it's incredible what you're doing. And I think it speaks a lot about your character and who you are, because those gals and guys are trusting you on a very different level. You know what I mean? And like, you're not just doing professional development, you're doing personal development. And that is going to carry into everything else they do. And I just think that's really rich that you're able to speak about that and carry that.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I really, really appreciate that. You know, sometimes my husband refers to me, I'm a regulator now. And, you know, people don't like regulators sometimes. But in the long run, I do like to hope that I've made a difference in some of these lives.
Thank you so much for what you do. Well, thank you so much for what all of you do, because it is so important when you think about Sheila's impacting at that level. Lisa, you're impacting with the pharmacy level. And you've brought dietitians in now that you're working with, and you're really starting to make sure that professional development is done correctly within your organization. And then Zoe, what you do within your organization and making sure that they follow the standards and whatnot. And I know that because Zoe is crazy about evaluation. So you know that she is taking a look and making sure that the things she's implementing is actually working and makes sense within her organization. So thank you so much for everything you guys are doing within your organizations to ensure that professional development is done correctly. Because at the end of the day, frontline staff, their outcomes are their patients, but for NPD or professional development, our outcome are our learners. And we want our learners to feel very secure in their knowledge and their expertise. I'm going to go ahead and ask you guys a little bit about barriers, but we're going to be positive about it, right? Like, we're going to be realistic, but positive. The honest answer is, no matter what you do in healthcare or in life, you're going to encounter barriers. What I love about the character of people who fall into professional development is they are opportunists. They find opportunity with every barrier that they come up against. And they're very creative about it. Like, sometimes you'll just be like, "How that worked?" Because they're just so outside of the box about it. So can you talk a little bit about some of the barriers you find within your specific unique position within your organization, and what you do to mitigate those barriers? And I'm going to start with Zoe this time.
Thanks, Jen. Well, I think Jill hit the nail on the head before with the term scope creep, because I think we'd all say time is the barrier, the big one that always comes up. And I think scope creep has a lot to do with it. But my very short and sweet response to that, that probably isn't very creative, but there's two big influences that help me, and I feel that they're very, very practical and quite useful for any role, really. So the first thing I try and do to manage this, you know, overwhelming sense of, oh, there's so much on my list, I don't even know where my list is because it's so big, there's stuff that's crept on and I don't have enough time to do it. The first thing that someone told me was, do what no one else is doing. Everything that we need to do is always needed. Like, everything that we want to do, we've got to do. It's always going to be needed. But what is it that only you can do that no one else can do, or that no one else will do or is doing, and do that? And the second piece of advice, which maybe isn't advice, but I've been reading listening to a fabulous book. It's a book about Amazon's practices, and it's called Working Backwards. And there's some really interesting practices that they talk about. It's obviously, you know, a phenomenal company that's been built. And one of them, or the kind of concept of working backwards, it's start with the customer in mind. So, you know, for our context of practice, it's start with the learner in mind and work backwards. And this book offers, you know, insight into the way Amazon's culture does that, and that's by using narrative. So they banned PowerPoints and said, we're not doing any PowerPoints. We're going to write these six-page documents instead. And there's two formats. One is just literally a narrative, six pages of text. The other is what they call a PR FAQ, so a press release and then FAQs. And I find the FAQs incredible because you start to think, what does the learner need, or what is the key stakeholder that you need, that you're working with need? Answer the questions that they will have and work backwards from there. So those two tools just really help me prioritize what needs to be done and help me manage my time more effectively.
That's great. And what a good way to work around that, and some great salient advice for everyone. How about you, Sheila? What are some barriers you encounter, and how do you turn them into lemonade?
I think, you know, again, I kind of go back to when I was reviewing all the different roles and justifying, you know, the certification bonus. One of the roles that I saw that I wasn't really fulfilling, and it kind of all goes back to, you know, the topic of substance use disorder and diversion, and that's in the research area. With any type of research on these two subjects, again, it's something that people don't like to talk about. Diversion is usually covert. It's done undercover. So it, you know, it's really hard to do, you know, research or evidence-based practice on the topic, because it is, you know, it is such a covert, and nobody's like, you know, with, if you want to do a survey or do research on it, you don't have, you know, all these people lining up saying, hey, I want to participate, because, you know, so it's just, you know, it's just, you know, a different kind of a subject. So I wanted to add something to my plate. So not, you know, my glutton for punishment, I guess. So I, you know, in the last year or so, I started looking at what is some way that I can, you know, get into that research or evidence-based practice, you know, aspect of the NPD role. So I was just, you know, doing my environmental scanning with the hospital, and they had put a call out with our new nurse resident group that was going to be starting. They were asking for facilitators to volunteer. And, you know, it talked about the role, and obviously the nurse resident groups, they break up into their subgroups, and then they do an evidence-based practice project. And I was like, ah, there we go. Again, I love working with, you know, the new nurse residents. I do a talk with them anyway about diversion prevention and substance use disorder. So it was just a nice segue to become a facilitator for one of those groups. So I actually am a facilitator for the pediatric med-surg nurse residents, which I'm not a pediatric nurse by trade. So I'm actually getting to learn along the way with their evidence-based practice project that they're doing. So, you know, sometimes you don't want to put stuff on your plate, but you don't want to close yourself off to opportunities that might be out there where you can make a difference, you can make an impact. Because even though that is not my area of expertise with peds med-surg, doing evidence-based practice and doing projects, that is an area I do know something about, so I can help guide what they're doing. Because, you know, they wanted to look at this great big, you know, project. And I'm like, okay, let's bring it down a little bit. Let's narrow our focus so that you can have a really good project and you can get some really good outcomes and get good information. And they were like, oh yeah, we probably should do that. So it's nice being able to share that information and knowledge with this new group of nurse residents that are coming on board. So again, sometimes, yes, we have to be aware of that scope creep, you know, as Zoe was talking about, but we also have to look for those opportunities where we can make an impact and then justify why we need to do that. So my chief pharmacy officer was very open and very willing to let me function as that facilitator for one of the nurse resident groups.
That's great, Sheila, that you are able to use your skill set that you have developed that expertise in over the years that you've had in NPD. And that's got to be incredibly fulfilling for you as well, to dip your toe back on that side, if you will, and to make an impact with these group of new grads.
Yes, absolutely. I like how you refer to it. I'm dipping my toe back in there, because it is, I love my job now. I love what I do. but it has been extremely fulfilling to work with these new nurse residents in a totally different capacity. And I'm really enjoying their evidence-based practice project that they're doing as well. So like I said, I'm getting to learn right along with them.
That's great. Lisa, tell us what barriers that you are experiencing to fulfill your roles and responsibilities of professional development. How do you overcome those?
Well, for me, a lot of it's understanding what words mean and that it can be meaning something different for like a pharmacy area or even a dietitian compared to like a nursing group. So one thing I will definitely say is emotional intelligence is something you need to steward, because walking into a room, be aware. But basically, pharmacy has always had educators. Like, we've always had someone who can do, like, if there's a new process to roll out, they'll give you all the details. Or, you know, we've had pharmacy residents for a long time, so they might help with that program, or a pharmacy intern. But really, it's explaining that this isn't replacing that, it's enhancing it and building that. You know, just like MPDs, like, you were educators as well. You had to show how, when you took on professional development, it meant you also took on these other layers and that you can actually enhance the experience overall. And so really trying to show that this was a solution, especially for my team, it was based on needing to achieve results that we receive feedback on in our employee engagement. You know, like, this is where we want to see enhancement. And wouldn't you know it, the answer was found in the MPD model. Like, that's what, you know, like, it's just explaining that, like, we're not replacing you. We're not suggesting that you are wrong. You're on the right path. And we're just saying, hey, you know, these are some of the things that are working for us, and we think you can expand on some of the areas you're already in. But having that language to be able to have a seat at the table on both sides is really important, so that you are honoring and respecting both sides. But now it's a beautiful thing, because now you have multiple disciplines that now speak a common language that I don't know that was there before. And, you know, so that's been kind of fun too. Like, it just, like, you know, explain that more. When you said this, like, when you say precepting, that's a different ball game for me. You know, so, like, I use the word coaching because then my team understands what that means, right? So I don't get them confused. So, you know, understanding that and having almost like a translation in a sense of, like, okay, when they're saying this, it means this. And when they do this, like, or we do this, this is how we impact them. Like, having that together. And I think also for me, like, I think it's also important to understand your own barriers about yourself when you go into professional development. So I think I alluded to this before, but the way I prove my value looks different now. I used to be very task oriented, and, you know, at the end of the day, I could say, look at all the interventions I made as a pharmacist. Like, I'm worth the value you invested in me. But now my people and their achievements, or how my culture is being impacted, is the investment calculator. You know, like, your return on investment takes longer to see and realize. And having to be able to speak to that and explain what those changes are that are coming and how I predict those to have a positive outcome on the department looks different, but it also needs time and being patient. And I'm not like that very easily. I like to fix things right away. You know, like, I want to have people see the ultimate vision, you know, and tell them how to get there. But over the last year and a half, I've realized I can't be a dictator of sorts and tell them how to get there. I need to come alongside them and guide them. And, you know, let them come to the same conclusions that I already probably have, or maybe they've come to a better one than I have, and, like, do it together, because you have a better buy-in. It's more their idea, you know, it lasts longer. So having to shift my own personality and how I handle things has also been a big, big change for me that I think has created a better result as well.
And I love how that the point that you made about needing to get where people, you need to go where they are. And that's hard for leaders because, and I do this slide presentation when I'm talking about leadership, and I have a picture of an obstacle course, and they're side by side. And on one, I have people reaching from the top of the obstacle course, trying to pull people up. And then I have another picture beside it of people on the ground, lifting those people up. And I'm like, that's where we need to be. You need to be where they are. You don't drag them up to where you are. You help to elevate them by starting where they're at. So I think you made such an amazing, point about that. So thank you so much for that insight. Is there anything additional, any additional points you guys would like to make or before we go to the end of our podcast?
I would just say that, you know, as an MPD practitioner, always going back to the framework and looking at, you know, the inputs and the throughputs and the outputs and really taking all of those pieces and seeing how they work together. You know, I love hearing Lisa talk about how she took that and then, you know, transposed it over into the pharmacy world and making all those different connections. But really that's the heart of it. You know, we have to look at all those different aspects and how they work together. And I love, you know, they're like gears and cogs and you really, they all have to rotate together and work together in order to have a good, solid framework and groundwork that is ultimately going to lead you to positive outcomes. Whatever those outcomes may look like. And in that evaluation, you know, what I'm going to look at for evaluation in my role is going to be completely different than what Zoe is going to look at and what Lisa is going to look at, but they all still have to be there. So just using that framework of the MPD practice, I think is extremely important.
I'd echo what Sheila says and honestly go back to the guru, Pam, and always, if in doubt, just try and figure out what the need is. You can't go wrong spending a little bit of extra time discovering the need of the learner, the stakeholder, the broader target audience. Just pays off in bucket loads in terms of our resource utilization and then overall outputs that we deliver and the, you know, the outcome of what we're trying to achieve. So go back to the need. It can never do you any disservice.
Talking about Pam Dickerson, I think that's one of the other really fantastic things about the MPD community is there are so many resources out there and there are so many different people who have, you know, different levels and different aspects of knowledge. And so don't ever hesitate to even reach out to any of those people and say, hey, you know, how did, you know, I need a little help in this area. So even looking, because I certainly don't know everything about MPD practice, you know, we continually learn on a daily basis, don't we? So, you know, not being afraid to reach out to, you know, other people within our MPD community, because everybody is out there and willing to share and help and elevate the practice of others. And I, that's the one thing that I just love about ANPD. I can remember my first conference that I went to, you know, of course, then it was in an SDO, but I was just like, and I know this has become our mantra. It was like, these are my people. I belong with these people. And so I hope that there are going to be other people that are fulfilling unique roles who may listen to this podcast and go, oh my gosh, that's what I do. These are my people. I do need to belong to this organization. So I hope that this podcast is far reaching and we actually can expand our membership and expand, you know, other people's horizons in utilizing our MPD model.
And not just looking at those who already have a unique role, but if you've been doing MPD for a while and you're just looking for something different, knowing that if you just open yourself up to these opportunities, like there's so many amazing things that you can do where you can still fit your expertise in there and help, you know, kind of push forward the agenda of professional development, which is to make our learners practice safely so that our patients get, you know, safe, quality patient care. So such an exciting podcast, guys. It was so amazing getting to talk to you guys. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Again, thank you, Sheila, Zoe, and Lisa for joining us on this spooktacular MPD forecast episode. Listeners, we appreciate your time and interest in this topic, and we have a number of references and resources to direct you to. First being our scope and standards with, of course, our beloved practice model within. You can dissect those inputs, throughputs, and outputs using our scope and standards and use that to relate to your practice. So if you don't own a copy of the scope and standards in your library, now's your chance to get one. Also, Zoe mentioned Working Backwards, Insights, Stories, and Secrets from Inside Amazon by Colin Breyer and Bill Carr. I have to admit, that's probably one I will have to add as an audiobook shortly. It sounds really interesting and how that can apply to NPD practice. We also have a quick reference guide entitled Developing Our Future, Succession Planning for NPD Practitioners. You listeners might have picked up on a theme of succession planning and networking and how important those are for us as NPD practitioners to not only fill our professional cups, but to develop and, you know, continue to pay it forward and have those impacts on the people that we work with day in and day out. Speaking of networking, ANPD has been hosting quarterly virtual networking events new this year, and we have a new webpage for our networking sessions, and this can be located at www.anpd.org. Go to the events tab, and then you can click networking, and you will have insight to upcoming networking events and be able to view past topics that we have had an opportunity to virtually connect on. And finally, our discussion board. Listeners, this is where we welcome you to post any comments, or hey, if you have a super cool NPD job, we want to hear from you. Tell us what it is that you do, and feel free to answer some of the questions that we asked our guests today. If you have any other questions or suggestions for future topics for the NPD forecast, please post on this episode's thread in the podcast discussion forum. You can access this through the Tools and Resources tab at www.anpd.org. Choose the podcast forum and you will see this episode's topic. You can listen to our podcast series by subscribing to NPD Forecast on the ANPD website, on the podcast page, or wherever you stream your favorite podcast episodes through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or iHeartRadio.
This NPD Forecast series analyzes information gathered through environmental scanning. Our goal at ANPD is to be your leading resource for NPD practice. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating on your preferred podcast platform, as well as a review. And if you feel so inclined, share with your friends and colleagues on social media. Be sure to tag ANPD when you do. Those ratings and reviews help us grow this platform and extend our reach. As NPD practitioners, we know our strength is in our sense of community. So the more you share the NPD forecast, the more valuable this environmental scanning resource will be. We would love to hear from you and encourage you to post podcast topic recommendations in the podcast discussion forum available on our website.
Thanks for listening. For more information, visit our website at anpd.org.